Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? It's IBS Yeezus. I'm coming at you guys again with the NFL Fancast. I actually don't have a Buffalo Bills fan rep, so I'm going to do this Fancast along with a good friend of mine, the commissioner of our sports group, Iconoclastically Bombastic Sports. His name is Ronnie. He's probably twice as knowledgeable as I am on the ins and outs of the NFL. So I'm going to have him come in, and we're going to talk about the Buffalo Bills. But before that, I've got to give you a disclaimer. As always, the platform and any of the podcasts that I do are part of the Iconoclastically Bombastic Network. You can follow us on Facebook at Iconoclastically Bombastic Sports, or you can follow us on Twitter at sports_IB, or you can check us out on IconoclasticallyBombasticSports.com. Either way, a lot of good content on there. There's sports, there's TV, there's music, so it's not just one thing. We're going to go ahead and get this podcast going early. We'll probably actually get out on time because Ronnie doesn't like to talk a lot. Let's see if guys in. Ronnie, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Did you say I didn't like to talk a lot?
Nah, I said you don't like to talk a lot.
No, I do. Man, the NBA Finals was on the last time I was at the playoffs. The last time I was on the podcast, on your podcast. I had to get out of there.
Some of these things last about 2 hours. I don't think we're going to spend
That is too much, yeah. I could talk longer, but I try to – I don't know if people actually listen to them that long. So I cut them down to try to get them shorter and shorter because it's interesting. You see, these people don't click links, so I'm trying to cater to their attention span. But you have participation, so it's not as bad as mine where – it's just me and two other people, like, or one other person. But you have a lot of participation and callers and stuff, so I can see that.
We'll go ahead and get it started. 2014 Buffalo Bills were 9-7. Surprisingly, they were 4-2 in their division. I usually start with the offense. The offense was ranked 18th in points per game, averaging about 21 points a game. They were 26th in yards per game, averaging about 318. They were 18th in passing yards, averaging 225 a game, and then 25th in rushing yards, averaging 92 a game. I don't know if you can recall any Buffalo Bill games that you might have watched, but what's your opinion on the 2014 Buffalo Bills offense?
Well, the problem with the offense was you started the season with E.J. Manuel, and he's just inconsistent, and I don't think he'll ever end up being an NFL quarterback. Then you went to Kyle Orton, and Kyle Orton was a lot better than people think, but it seems like he would always make a critical mistake. The Bills basically are quarterback away, or consistent quarterback play away, from being a Super Bowl contender. I mean, to me, they are a quarterback away from being Seattle. Now, granted, you'd have to find a special quarterback, but that's what they are. I mean, if they just got like a Dalton, then no. But a quarterback, a guy, if they got a top 10 quarterback somehow, they could be Seattle. If they got a top 15 quarterback, they could be like the Chiefs were a couple of years. Like, if they got Alex Smith level quarterback play, they could make the playoffs every year.
Yeah, I agree, actually, and that's funny because it's exactly how I wrote that down in regards to who they kind of reminded me of. Just the poor man's Seattle. If you took away Russell, that's pretty much what you would have. Offensively last year, I was a little confused when they switched out E.J. Manuel because I know he had two bad games because he started the season okay, and then his second game was pretty good by his standards. And then that third and fourth game, I think it was San Diego and Houston. I mean, it was a huge drop. Like, it was like, am I watching the same guy? But I looked it up. So apparently they took EJ out because his throws were a concern for the staff and for the wide receivers.
Yeah, I remember. I remember Watkins. I remember Watkins or something report coming out with Watkins didn't like throwing to him, or that when Kyle Orton did come in, like all the receivers were like happy because they actually got the ball when they were supposed to get the ball. Just in general, I've watched him on tape. He's very late in his time, and he doesn't have good footwork. Kind of the RG3 problem. He's not accurate. His mechanics aren't consistent, and his timing is off. All of the nuances that it takes to play the quarterback position, he lacks. So he has the physical. A lot of these guys who come from those systems, even though he came from a pro-style system at Florida State, but all the quarterbacks that are usually athletic, they don't possess the subtle nuances that you need to do to play the position. Like, you got to drop back, hit your back foot, the ball's got to be out. But or you drop back, and as you're dropping back, you got to scan your first read, your second read, and your third read, and by the time you hit the back foot, it's got to come out. That's a hard skill to have, and he does not have it. I don't think he ever will either.
Yeah, I don't think he will either, and it pains me to say that as a Florida State fan. I wasn't high on E.J. Manuel when he came out of college. I mean, you know, you cheer for these guys in college, and then when they get to the pros, you just get pretty brutally honest about their abilities. I don't carry my fandom into the NFL. I don't even think he was properly endorsed by Jimbo either. I think the word was that Jimbo couldn't wait to get rid of him. So he could.
Yeah, they wanted to get rid of him, yep.
Yeah, so that should tell you something. Kyle Orton is Kyle Orton, like you said. He's not bad. He's not as bad as people think, but he's not special. So, I mean, you pretty much get middle-of-the-road numbers with him. Nothing that you can be too angry about, but nothing that you can hang your hat on as well. I think the real story to that offense last year was, yet again, C.J. Spiller can't stay 100% healthy. I mean, I think his whole tenure in Buffalo, each season, there was some injury that kept him out more than two or three games. And then Fred Jackson comes in. They do the running back by committee. It moves the ball a little bit, but they don't finish drives.
Yeah, they had a very annoying fantasy team. Because you got Fred Jackson, who gives you a little bit of value, but you know Spiller is explosive. I think Spiller had one year that was, like, very good. But you got both of them kind of alternating, and then so Spiller always gets hurt. Then he comes back. Then you don't know. He has, like, soft tissue injuries, so he's always, like, a game-time decision. They're very frustrated just on a fantasy level.
Yeah, and if you are listening and you're into fantasy football, I'll get into the Greg Roman style offense later. I can't wait for that. But Fred Jackson, man, if you're in a PPR league, like points per reception, he's your guy. He actually led that team last year with 66 receptions, which is sad because he's a running back and he's not even starting. he's like technically second. I call him 2.5 on the depth chart. Sometimes Dixon gets more touches than him. And, I mean, Dixon was a special teams player, and then you roll him into this offense, and he's actually playing an important role in that offense. So they're kind of doomed from the jump. I mean, offensively, not much to talk about from 2014 for them. But when you roll to this defense, this actually got me excited. I wish I had film to watch on the guys because I didn't see them play as much as I wanted to. But you go by the numbers, you're talking number four in total yards given up the entire year, 4,995 yards. They were fourth in yards per game, the number three passing defense, number 11 in the rush, number four in points per game. And then my favorite thing about this defense, number three in takeaways, 19 interceptions and 11 fumbles. Like, you can't ask for a better defense, given how poor that offense was last year.
Yeah, you've got elite, you got studs on that defense. And the thing I almost am worried about, you know, Rex is a genius. Like, what they had was working, and they got rid of Schwartz, that used to be the coach of Detroit. That defense was just rolling, and so I mean, I feel like it'll be one of those situations where maybe they won't get the traditional rankings, but they still might be better. Because sometimes some of the advanced stats will show you if somebody really got better or not, whereas, like, the traditional stats won't necessarily reveal to you that a defense got better, or maybe they'll play better people or something like that. But the sky is the limit. It really is. And they played a 4-3 under Jim Schwartz, and they didn't really change. But Rex likes to move around people, blitz, show all kinds of different looks. You've got stud, you got Pro Bowlers with Marcel Darius, and you got Corbin Bryant, Jarius Wynn, Stephen Charles, and the linebackers. You got Mario Williams had 14 and a half sacks. Jerry Hughes is like one of the most underrated players in the league. I mean, you just got the Brown had 109 tackles as a rookie. I mean, just all over the place. It's just maybe one of the best, probably the best front seven in the league, and maybe the best second or third best defense in the whole league.
Yeah, I'm just gonna go ahead. We'll just talk like we're normally talking. There's no need to run through an actual segment per segment. This defense is great, and they kept the majority of these people. If I recall, I think they kept everybody because they re-signed. They re-signed Jerry Hughes and Jarius Wynn during the offseason. So Rex Ryan is literally inheriting one of the best defenses in the league, and he's already a defensive-minded person. And you look at what he did with the Jets. You can go back to what he's done with the Ravens, and I think talent-wise, this team is just as talented as his Ravens defense than what he worked with when he was with the Jets, and that's scary.
Yeah, it really is.
And like you said, though, the one thing that makes me worried, and I looked into it a little bit, so Jim Schwartz runs a 4-3. I looked on the SB Nation Buffalo Bills site. I like to go to them sometimes because some of the people who contribute literally follow those teams like it's their job. So the SB Nation people were saying that even though Rex runs a 3-4, scheme-wise, if you look at it on film and the way they had it drawn up on the diagram, they said it actually looks more like a 4-3. So their thinking is that they can still utilize people in the same manner that Jim Schwartz utilized them last year. They'll just be given different verbiage just because it's a 3-4 defense. But one thing they said that worried them was Schwartz ran a very Seattle-like system where he didn't do a lot of different looks, and he just ran with his front seven, and they're going to come after you. I looked it up, and they were one of the lowest rated teams when it came to blitzing last year, and it worked for them. Under Rex Ryan, you know pressure's coming. It's just automatic. Yeah. That's a given.
And that's an interesting thing, too. That's what I thought. Like, maybe it's almost counterproductive because you got Rex almost overthinking it. But I've seen Rex, I think Rex has more flexibility than a lot of other coaches. I think you'll see some of his staples. But I'm not sure how blitz heavy they'll be this year, with him knowing what they already have in place. I think he's a lot more flexible in his defense than his brother Rob is, because Rob wants to blitz anyway, unless he just has nothing.
Yeah.
Like the Saints last year, they had a lot of injuries. But with Rex, I've seen with the Jets, they didn't blitz as much last year because they just didn't have their secondary, so they didn't do it.
Yeah.
So I can see him being more adaptable to they aren't going to be bad no matter what. But I can see him being more adaptable than the average coach.
Yeah, and it's just funny when you look at the numbers on the defense. Like if I told somebody that the more you blitz, actually the less pressure you get, you would probably look at me confused. But the numbers show that the Bills had more pressure and better pressure, more hurries, and more sacks from base formations not blitzing last year than when they did blitz. So it's just...
Well, they have studs on the front four. You got Williams, you got Darius, you got Mario Williams, you got Kyle Williams, and Marcel Darius. It helps to have a front four that can get pressure. I'll say that.
Yeah, it does. And speaking of the front four, that defense, I went through my Pro Football Focus site and looked up just out of curiosity, because when you get a team that good on defense, you know, a lot of times we poke at the Seahawks and you'd be like, well, so-and-so's not that good, it's really this person doing this. Or so-and-so's not doing their job, it's really just everybody going away from this person. So I took an individual look at these guys, and I've got three defensive ends, Mario Williams, Jerry Hughes, Jarius Lynn, two linebackers, Nigel Bradham and Preston Brown, defensive tackles, Marcel Darius, Kyle Williams, cornerbacks, Corey Graham, Stephen Gilmore, and the safety, Norris Searcy. All those names were top 30 rated players in their respective positions. That's 10 names out of 11 positions on the defense that were top 30. So you can't look at this team or defensively and just say, oh, well, Hughes is only good because Mario Williams is getting double teamed. No, each person carries their weight in that on that defense. If we're talking about last year, definitely they carried their weight. They definitely earned their reputation. But it's just funny because when you talk about great defenses, last year, nobody really mentions the Bills. It's not the first name that comes up.
I guess, too, with the defenses, like if you're winning, they'll talk about you. But if you're not winning, they don't really, because defense isn't as flashy. But the only reason, I think they went 8-8, but the only reason they even had a decent season was because of that defense, because the offense wasn't hitting on a whole lot. And so even with Kyle Orton, it's just not,
they
just don't have the pieces.
Yeah, they actually finished 9-7. I honestly thought they were 7-9 or 8-8. But I highlighted that 4-2 in the division because I thought that was even more interesting. I'm assuming that their two losses were to the Patriots. And then if you take into consideration,
they beat the Patriots one time at the end of the season, I think. Or was that the Dolphins? Either the Dolphins or the Bills beat the Patriots at like the end of the season. It was kind of like a meaningless game. That's why I thought they were 8-8. I think it is the Bills because I thought they were 8-8 because they won a game against the Patriots and the Patriots kind of like clinched everything.
Okay.
I think that's what happened if I remember it right.
The Bills must have beat them at the end because the Dolphins got smacked in the second game.
Yeah, it was at the
end.
They
beat them the first game.
It was the Bills. That's why in my head they were 8-8, but they got that one. They really are 8-8. But they got that win at the end that the Patriots didn't care about. Yeah, they beat the Patriots 17-9. I think, So, but technically they won 9, so you got to give them their due. And they could have. I remember there was a game where there was a game they blew up. I remember the game in particular they showed me the talent they had. So I've been watching them, but when they Aaron Rodgers went to Buffalo and they put a beating on him. And that was the game. I'm looking at their schedule now. That was the game that showed me what the defense had to offer.
Yeah, I actually remember that because that was actually one of the times where I wanted to jump on our site and go in on the Packer fans. But obviously my team wasn't doing anything that season. And I realized that, hey, the Bills are actually a good defense, so it wasn't anything shameful about it. But I mean,
yeah, it was. I'm looking at it now, and Rodgers was 17-42 for 185 yards and 0 touchdowns. Like nobody does that to him. They are disgusting as a defense. Nobody does that to him. Like you couldn't get that many incompletions in like 5 games for him sometimes. And he the only two people that caught a pass for them were Jordy Nelson and maybe they didn't show him. You know that. Because he got 17 completions. But 12 of those were to Nelson and Cobb. So that was a rough day at the office for Aaron Rodgers, and he pretty much is the consensus best quarterback, best player in the league. So the defense, the thing about, you haven't got to the offense yet, but if they can get a running game that's even more consistent, like you were saying, and with McCoy, they might have that, some big playability in the running game that's consistent and not hurt, then maybe they can have that traditional Bill Parcells, run the ball, use some clock, and play great defense.
Yeah, I think that's the idea heading into 2015. When you look at how they drafted and the type of offensive coordinator that they brought in, one thing I will give credit to Greg Roman for is that he helped instill the power game in San Francisco. That was what everybody knew us as originally, especially in the first season and a half of his tenure, is that we were a power running game and we played defense behind that. I think that's what Rex Ryan has in mind because he's got the defense to do that with. And you look at their takeaways from last year, they're going to be a defense that gets the ball back as well. Like, they're not just the defense that's, you know, the bend but don't break type thing that we see a lot of times in today's game, considering that people call it a passing league. But this team is a team of takeaways. They got 19 interceptions, forced 11 fumbles. They're going to either take it out the air or they're going to smack you in the mouth and make you cough it up. So I don't think they're going to have a problem playing that style. One thing that I wanted to highlight, too, because we spent a lot of time talking about their front seven or front four as well, the secondary for the Bills is very underrated. I think it's something that I saw highlighted a lot on their fan website and in videos and little gifs that they have out there. The communication from the safeties to the corners, it gave Schwartz so much flexibility in what they did. You can't even pinpoint some plays, whether they're running man or zone, because guys are mixing and matching. And from what I was reading, Schwartz actually gave them the green light to change coverage mid-play and stuff like that. If they saw something on the field, they didn't need to get it from the coach, change it right then and there. And one thing they were saying is that in the Cleveland Browns game is when it all kind of took off. There was plays where the safeties were lining up over the slots and people were like, oh, that's a zone, or people were reading zone. And then you find out this, it's really a combo coverage system, and this corner peels off, the safety runs to this spot, and this guy's in man. So it's very confusing for a quarterback looking out on the field. You got guys running all over the place, and you still got that pressure from up front. You put that together, and it's just a crazy combination.
Yeah, they did. And all this talk we're doing about the defense almost makes me wonder why they didn't hire Jim Schwartz. But the way he ended things in Detroit, he didn't go that well. But it almost makes you wonder about. But I think with Rex, the first year he gets the guys so hyped that I think they'll be very successful for maybe the first two or three years, and then it kind of wears down. But then you got to look at Rex and say, how much was he helped? I mean, they had I believe the Jets were like $20 to $23 million under the cap last year. They just weren't spending. So it's like they didn't help Rex out a lot at all. And granted, he's not an offensive coach, but you can't hamstring a man as far as talent goes, too. And that defense wasn't even that talented for the Jets anymore because they had let so many people leave. Now they want to restock it. But, I think the sky really is the limit under Rex as far as for that defense. And the team, I don't think it would be impossible. I don't think it's going to happen. Like a repeat of the Jets where they make a playoff run. Maybe they're a wild card and they win more, at least the game, or they even get to the championship game again, depending on how things fall. I don't think that's out of the possibility. And also the thing I wanted to talk about, we didn't quite talk about it, with Tyrod Taylor. I don't think Matt Castle is the answer, and I don't think that EJ is the answer. But there's always been something about Tyrod Taylor. Now, this is before I started watching film and really digging deep into football or even having access to film. But just watching him play, it always seemed like there was something special about him, even though he was undersized. I don't know if he can just be one of those quarterbacks that can come out of nowhere and win the starting job and do something, like a Kurt Warner or like a Russell Wilson, maybe not to that degree. But I don't know. I feel like if he got the chance, like he might be able to do something.
Yeah, that's a good point that you bring up. And I'm very biased. When it comes to Virginia Tech quarterbacks, Virginia Tech anything football. I mean, you see me on the threads and stuff. I'm always anti-Tech. But one thing I will give Tyrod credit for, and one thing that makes me think that he possibly could be the man for the job, is that he's always been very smart with the football. And that's something that you can't teach, and that's something that Russell Wilson has. And I know people are probably like, you're comparing them. No, I'm not. I'm just saying that one intangible – where the guy just always knows what to do when the ball is in his hands goes a very long way when you've got a defense that can protect the lead or can get you the ball back. Because you end up in these situations where you're pretty much on shorter fields because your defense is pinning people and then they got a punt and you play that field position game for maybe the first 10, 15 minutes of the game. And then all of a sudden you give the ball to your playmaker in LeSean McCoy, or you maybe get somebody like Tyron with athleticism, rolls out the pockets, finds Sammy Watkins, Charles Clay. I mean, these guys, Percy Harvin, they can make plays if you get them the ball. And I think a smart quarterback will find a way to get them the ball, whether it's through the air, making an audible, and just opening up the field for everybody around them because he's that athletic. It can happen. It really can. Like, if you're a Bills fan, there's a reason to be optimistic if there's a scenario where Tyrod comes in to be quarterback. But what I don't like is Greg Roman. And I think Rex Ryan got a bad shake in New York. Like you said, they didn't really do a lot to help him achieve what he wanted to achieve there or to back up his bold predictions a lot of times. But Greg Roman is welcome to me in San Francisco. And you know, we've argued about this multiple times. But it's just he got too cute towards the end of his tenure in San Francisco. And if he can stick to a power running game or whatever scheme that they decide to do, if he can be consistent with his play calling, then they can go far. But I don't think they're going to go far because I don't trust his play call.
And I know that's been one of your big issues with that. But I will say with them, and a lot of times we don't have access to how injured players are or what's going on with their mindset. And I noticed mm-hmm. that there were times where I felt like they really tried to force the wide receiver thing a little too much. They tried to expand cap too quickly or he just couldn't handle it or whatever. But I will say a lot of the season you had games where two tight ends were hurt. And that's to their offense. One of the keys to their offense mm-hmm. is being able to get those big jumbo sets and run it down your throat and pull the guards and do the wham block and have extra men at the line of scrimmage to just dominate. And if you don't have that, now do you say, hey, do we go five wide? I don't think that's necessarily the answer either. We just spread them out with a quarterback that can't do
yeah.
it. But I do understand why they couldn't. And towards the end of the season, they still were like fourth in rushing yards and top five in rushing attempts. So it wasn't like they totally went away from the running game.
Yeah, and ultimately, when I looked at the numbers of Frank Gore, without trying to pull in too much 49er stuff, but obviously Greg Roman comes from the 49ers, so if we're going to talk about what he could potentially do, we got to look at what he's done. Frank Gore had decent numbers. I just didn't like the red zone play calling, and I'm still searching on who to blame for that, whether it's Harbaugh, Roman, or even our new offensive coordinator right now, Chris. Somebody, whoever was calling those red zone plays were awful. And if it was Greg Roman, it would be very evident once the Bills start playing in regular season games and the games get tight. And he's going to have some tight games because he's in a very competitive division. But it just has to be more or less flawless. He's got to get that right. And the other thing that kind of concerns me is LeSean McCoy's not really a one-cut back in between the tackles type runner. He doesn't strike me as that type of runner or the type of runner Greg Roman has worked
that
with.
They need, yeah.
So how is he going to play? How is he going to fit in this scheme? We know he's a playmaker, but how do you incorporate his style in a power running system? Will it be a power running system? Can that happen? Is what I'm a little concerned about.
Yeah, I would imagine they have to sprinkle some plays that would cater to his strengths, but I still think you're going to see a lot of what they can do. But I think Shady actually is versatile, and I also think that now he's never going to be a power runner, but I think Shady's very versatile as a runner, and I think we focused on it, or Chip focused on it, or let people know about him, you know, not doing exactly what he wanted so often that clouded our judgment. He still, even in Chip's system, a one-cut system, last year wasn't that bad after the slow start, and I think he led the league in rushing the year before, the first year in Chip's system. So he can do it, even though it's even more of a power running game that San Francisco or the Greg Roman system wants to run, but I think you're still looking at a 1,500-yard season if he stays healthy, production-wise, because it's just the talent wins out.
Yeah, I mean, he had a good enough season
Like I pointed out in the chat that one time, he's had a good enough season the last 9 games especially that you could be confident that he can do, you know, like you said, about 1,500 yards.
And the line was beat up, too. The line, they were on second,
yeah,
first, and that was some of his apprehension, too, I think. He didn't trust the line, so he was doing a lot of jukes at the line and missing a lot of holes, actually.
Yeah, and he's going to – I think it'll work for him to run behind the fullback. And I highlighted one of their acquisitions during the offseason, which I thought was funny. Nobody paid attention to John Connor. He's not just about killing Terminators. He's actually a pretty decent fullback. So I think he'll help. And Rex Ryan is familiar with him. I think he played for him in New York, I think. But I think that'll help having a fullback in front of him. And then with his vision, because he's still got great vision, it'll help him be a little bit more comfortable hitting holes inside or bouncing outside and stuff. So it'll help. I think it'll help his style just a little bit to incorporate it into a power running game. But like you said, he'll never be that Frank Gore type back. But they've got enough weapons offensively. You don't know. Maybe they don't need that type of back. I mean, they picked up Percy Harvin. He's still got playmaking ability. He hasn't shown it in about 3 seasons, but we know it's there. And you got to be excited about Watkins coming back. He had a great rookie season. I think Tyrod Taylor would be the best bet for them.
Yeah, I'm in that same camp too. And you look at, I've always been kind of high on Robert Woods as far as the fact that he could be a productive, talented guy. Got Watkins, got Harvin. If he keeps his head on straight, he can, and he's probably going to be looking to prove it. So, I mean, you got the weapons. You got even more weapons on offense than you had. Another year of Sammy. Of development, and he got hurt last year, I believe, and he still was pretty explosive. And a lot of people that I respect are very high on Sammy Watkins as being the best player on that draft, in that draft from last year. And you still have, look at what Odell Beckham Jr. did. So you still, maybe we see more of Sammy Watkins being explosive, because if they can just make big plays to help that defense, they are, shucks, 11-win team. If they max out Percy and Sammy and LeSean McCoy, you know, any quarterback, if those guys are playing their best football, any quarterback could probably look good.
Yeah, and it's just, again, the only real concern I have is that you end up in a situation where Rex and Greg have so much to work with that they overcompensate, you know? Maybe, I don't know, I wanted all to come together for this franchise. I think they deserve another taste of glory, even if it is a Super Bowl defeat. But just postseason play and stuff. Buffalo's been deprived for a long time, man.
I believe they're the longest team without going to the playoffs. I believe they had the longest streak of missing the playoffs.
Yeah. So and there's a reason to be very optimistic. A lot of energy is coming to this franchise, so hopefully it all pans out. One other thing I wanted to ask you before we run into this draft class real quick. People are crowning them early as the best defense ever. Do you think that's in the realm of possibility? Could they be better than the Ravens defense? I hate to say it, but that's what people are getting excited about.
The Ravens are the Bears. I mean, that's always really hard. You got to win, first of all, to do that.
Yeah.
So, how about this? If they can win the Super Bowl or go to the Super Bowl, but we're going to say win the Super Bowl, because the two best defenses that I've ever encountered in my lifetime and I know of before we're counting in the modern, somewhat modern era, are the 85 Bears, and they went 15-1 and didn't have a great offense. But they had an old Walter Payton and Jim McMahon. And then the Ravens, who had Trent Dilfer at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And so you talk about two defenses that were so great that they carried a team to the Super Bowl. Impressively at that. Like, it never was really a problem in the Super Bowl game itself, and they had close games. But for the most part, these teams ran roughshod over the season and in the playoffs and went to Super Bowl and won in impressive fashion. So if we we can get a defense that's so dominant that it almost doesn't matter, you just have to be confident on the other side of the ball, then yes, I'll put them up there. But until I see that, no. Because that's what the greatest defense of all time did. It didn't even matter what was going on the other side.
Yeah, I agree in that sense that it's going to take more than just talking about it, obviously. But I think they're moving in the right direction if they can keep those takeaways high. I think that's very key. And when we're talking about especially the Ravens, obviously the gap between our age limits me from knowing anything about the 85 Bears defense that I was see on YouTube. But I lived the Ravens defense, and I remember that specifically. I mean, they were such a fun team to watch because every would get an interception or somebody, not every, I think it was Whitson then, would get a pick or Sharper would be laying blocks and Lewis would be laying blocks. They were just such a good team, and that kind of became their MO. When they got takeaways, they turned it into either points or good field position for that field goal.
Yeah.
And I think it was Stover was their kicker then. I mean, the guy led the league in points, led the team in points. It was ridiculous because they were just that good. If they keep that up, they definitely could be in that realm of
legend. Irony when you say that, the irony in the 85 Bears discussion is a defensive coordinator, and basically the guy was even a dick of his coach. But they end up taking this guy, the Buddy Ryan, their dad, Rex's dad, off the field as the when they were celebrating. He was a defense coordinator, came up with the 46 defense, just blitz happy, whatever. A lot of the principles that both of the sons use come from Buddy Ryan, so it kind of comes full circle in our conversation with their dad and them learning it and them being deeply influenced by their dad's blitzing and pressure philosophies. And his dad being at the helm of the, in my opinion, the greatest defense of all time.
Well, that's definitely going to come up in ESPN 30 for 30s and stuff. If Rex Ryan makes
the Super
Bowl,
they definitely need Ryan 30 for 30, all three of them. They definitely need that before their dad, I hate to say it, but before their dad passes because he's not been doing well health wise lately.
Yeah, I like the Ryans. I like Rex as a head coach. I just, like you said, and we highlighted it earlier, he just didn't get a fair shake in New York. But it's, like I said, the Bills haven't gotten a fair shake as a franchise in a while, so maybe it's just the perfect match. It all comes
together. Yeah, it could be, hopefully.
For coaching the franchise. So their draft's okay. They got a B grade for most people that I saw, B minus. I'm only familiar with the players in their draft because they picked up three people from Florida State that I obviously watched all last year. At the time of the draft, before, obviously I decided to do these fan casts, at the time of the draft, I was very disappointed that they didn't take a look at a quarterback. I didn't like Matt Castle. I don't think I was aware that they had Tyrod at the time, but I thought they should have tried to get a quarterback, but they didn't really have the draft picks to trade up to get maybe a Mariota or somebody like that. Or even my boy from Baylor, Petty, that I was really high on, they didn't have any picks to make moves with. So going by who they picked first, Ronald Darby, the cornerback for Florida State. They got an offensive guard, John Miller, after that. Then they picked up Carlos Williams, who's listed as a running back. Used to play safety, but I'm sure he's going to be a running back in the league. Tony Stewart, linebacker from Clemson, that a lot of people liked his athleticism. Then Nick O'Leary, who at one time was the best tight end in the nation. And then Desmond Lewis, a wide receiver. Do you think anybody in this draft class for them will come in and make an impact?
Well, I think O'Leary can help them. I don't know if he'll help them this year, but I think O'Leary can help them. I can see Williams, the running back, him playing some special teams. I can also see him making some big plays, but they just seem like just running back will be crowded. But running backs kind of, you never know. But I can see him being like somebody that maybe averages 4.5 yards a carry, but doesn't get a lot of carries. But maybe in special teams he'll help. maybe a special teams O'Leary will help too. Like, you got to look at these guys and that. I'm kind of interested to see. Maybe they just went best available when they went with Darby. They're already loaded at cornerback, but it's Kelvin and Graham. The others with Kelvin and Corey Graham both will be 30 years old before the season starts. So, and they only signed through 2016. So maybe they're looking to add depth. They're looking for replacements. And with Rex, I guess you can't really have too many cornerbacks. I don't know who was on the board at the time. But their draft seems a bit pedestrian. They got the people at Florida State that weren't necessarily the best ones. But you never know with these things. But I don't see anybody that really stands out to me other than maybe Darby turning into something.
Yeah, I had Darby not necessarily contributing this year, but – like, you know, we talked about Rex and his blitzing schemes and stuff. He doesn't even really fit that mold. Because I know Rex likes to send safeties and corners a lot of times from the outside. He's not considered a good tackler. He's actually considered an unsafe tackle. He likes to lead with his helmet a lot and stuff. And it actually affected his draft stock a little bit, I was reading as well. But he's an excellent athlete. He's a good coverage corner. And he can do he can zone, he can do man. He won't have a problem covering. He just has a problem tackling. So it'll probably take him a couple seasons to really become a solid fit. I thought maybe Carlos Williams could be an instant impact, maybe a thunder and lightning type thing because he's a very physical runner. The issue is that apparently he's gained some weight, and he's had obviously the off-field issues. So I don't know if he'll even last a long time in the league, considering how things go nowadays in the NFL. You don't get much of a chance. All it takes is one mess up, and he's already coming in with a strike and an asterisk beside him. So, O'Leary.
I do think I was looking at the offensive lineman they've got, and they were saying that he might have a chance to start. So he might end up being the biggest impact player, but offensive line plays always hard. I take other people's word for it, but offensive line just. It's very time-consuming to analyze offensive line, and I don't know what I'm looking at halftime. So that, I will admit, that's one of my weak areas.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, man. Like, I looked because I saw he was the second pick, and I was like, oh, guard. Because, you know, they got rid of Piers, and they took some hits on that section of offensive line. And the first thing I looked at, I always look at the cons before I look at the pros on linemen. And if it says you ain't got good feet, I usually just dismiss you. I can't help it. If you ain't got good feet I just don't see how you can be good in the league. The one thing about him is they said he has slow feet. He's got poor leverage when he blocks, but he's really strong. So, if he's playing guard, you know, it's not necessarily that big of a deal for footwork when you're playing guard, but I know Roman likes to pull people every now and then, so maybe he'll end up at tackle. I don't know. Anthony Davis didn't have great feet, but we used him in the power run game. And
too, they're really weak at that position. So they're really weak at guard anyway, so he might be starting out of necessity. But Pro Football Focus had their guard ranked in the red, which was, like, bad at that position. So he might just do it out of necessity.
Yeah, I didn't even want to look at the 2015 depth chart because I was like, I got good expectations for this team. I don't want Pro Football Focus to ruin it for me.
A lot of green on the chart there. It's pretty good. Pretty good looking chart. That's what I was looking at when I was – you were pretty thorough, but I was looking at the chart. It was very good.
Yeah, and I was going to say, usually
– the two defensive tackles at elite, you know, and a lot of the whole teams don't have elite players. They have two on defense.
Pro Football Focus is a good source to get some good in-depth analysis on players. So if you think somebody's good, and I'll give you an example, Evan Mathis, we had this argument with Philly fans for almost an hour. Look on Pro Football Focus, they will get you straight. They will get you straight.
Yep. And that's the thing, too. You can't necessarily, with Pro Football Focus, I want to say to people, like, you can't use it as a Bible, but it's a good reference point because they are going through it play by play and breaking down to the best of their ability what they're doing, and nobody else has the time to do that. So that's a pretty good reference. I watch a lot of quarterback play and receiver play, but, you know, you got a job. You can't watch everybody, but they do a very good job. Like, if I see two players closely rated, am I going to say I think so-and-so is better than the other? No. But if I look at the whole season and I see their rating, or if I look at the chart, the game by game, whether they had a good game or bad game, you know, it's just an invaluable reference. It really is.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully they give us some money for that plug, too.
Yeah, I know, really. So, I'm willing to give them. I pay for them, and I'm willing to give them free plugs.
Yeah. So, looking into the 2015 season, trying to see if we can accurately predict the Bills' record to the best of our knowledge. So the first thing I noticed looking at their schedule, it starts off kind of hot. And we still have to wait to see if Tom Brady will have one or two-game suspension, four-game suspension. We don't know what's going to happen with that yet. But the Bills open their first four games, the Colts, the Patriots, the Dolphins, and the Giants. Not easy. Not easy at all. And the defense will be tested early because the Colts have a very potent offense coming in this year. So that'll be a good test for them.
Where is that at? Who's at home on that one?
They actually opened with two home games. The Colts and Patriots will both be in Buffalo, so that helps.
You might be getting the Patriots without Brady. Most likely, I would think, two games at least, you'll be getting the Patriots without Brady. So that will help them a little bit.
Yeah. I definitely
think they come out of that 2-2. If they come out 3-1, you're really good. But they can come out of that stretch 2-2. I think they've done well.
Yeah, they've got they actually three of their first four games are home. So Colts, Patriots, and Giants are at home. They travel to Miami in week three. So yeah, I guess, you know, if you look at it like that, that's not too bad. Then they've got a little bit of fluff. They've got the Titans in week five. They've got the Bengals, and then they go to London and play the Jaguars, which seems to be the new home for the Jaguars. And then
brief aside, why would we want to export the Jaguars? I don't know. If you're trying to make people love football from another country, that's not the way to do it. I know that.
No, man, the league has secretly been trying to move Jacksonville to L.A. or to London. I don't care what
they're trying to push that. Yeah, something's going on because there's no reason to keep putting them over there.
But for some reason, they you know what I think it is? Because they're so bad and the games are so high scoring, it makes people happy.
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
if you sent the Steelers and Ravens to London, nobody would want to watch that.
That's true. When they first went to London, I remember the crowd, because the British didn't know a lot about it, and they've gotten better about it, and there's a lot of expats there. But at first, they thought the kickoff was the most exciting thing because it reminded them of soccer. So lots of kickoffs when you play Jacksonville. Lots of kickoffs.
Scobie's jersey sales are the best in London.
Exactly.
So I can see them beating the Titans. I can see them beating the Bengals and the Jags. But then they got a home game against the Dolphins. They could potentially win that too. So if I'm looking at the first eight games, I got them at least generously 6-2. Realistically 5-3.
Yeah, I would say that 5-3 too. I think they should be disappointed if they were. If they come out of that 4-4, I mean, they still would be in contention, but I think they should be disappointed if they come out of that. But they got a lot of toss-up games. The Colts are tough. They're not favored, but I see that as a close toss-up game. They're at home. Anybody could win one possession, a couple plays, two or three plays beside the game. Same thing with New England, especially if Brady's not playing, they should win, but you never know what Belichick's going to have. Dolphins are going to Miami. They could lose that game. Giants, they could lose that game, but they should win that game. They definitely should beat Tennessee. They definitely should beat Jacksonville. And Cincinnati's not easy either. That's one of those that's going to be a tough game, too. That's just a toss-up. Two teams that, if they max out, Cincinnati's been to the playoffs 3 years straight, so that's not a gimme either. So they need to come out of that 4-3, I think we said, not what is it, 5-3, but
yeah,
4-4 could happen too.
Yeah, because their second half season is tough. It's, there's no other way to call it. The second half of the season, they've got 3 straight road games. They're at the New York Jets, at the New England Patriots, and at the Kansas City Chiefs. That's going to be tough.
Yeah, that's a murder. That's a murderer's row. I think they still probably have better personnel than the Jets. You never know. They're going to New England, that's tough. And just that stretch of having to have 3 straight road games, one of them, and then the notorious Thursday night game is the Jets game. They're going to the Jets. They got the bye week, then the Dolphins at home, and then they got to go to the Jets on a short week, and then they got to go after that. It's like it's kind of like a mini bye where you get the Thursday game, but then the week after that on Monday Night Football they play the Patriots. So big prime time game, 2 big prime time games in a row. The Thursday night little quirky thing, so it should be. And then you go to Kansas City after that, so that's a hell of a stretch.
Yeah, and I could, and again, depending on if they're healthy and stuff, I know people listening are probably like, well, that's not very optimistic. The defense is going to be good enough. Yet again, they're going to be good enough that they're going to still be in all these games, that even the ones we're like, well, you know, it's kind of a toss-up, that defense should still keep them in the game. And going back to the first 2 games, you know, we're like Colts and Patriots, you opening up with them, that's tough. Trust me, if you're Andrew Luck or if you're Jimmy G or Tom Brady, you don't want to open up with one of the best pass rushers or pass rushing defenses in the league. So it's gonna go both ways. So it's not just going to be, well, you got to play these 2 tough quarterbacks. No, those 2 tough quarterbacks have to play 1 really tough defense as well. Then they've got a week 13, they've got a home game against the Texans. Then they go through their NFC East gauntlet. They're going to be at Philly, at Washington, and then a home game against the Cowboys, which I'm sure will get 100 million references to Super Bowls in the 90s. And, then they end the season
the
at home. Yep, which might actually be a make or break game for one of those teams, whether it be Buffalo or the Jets, if not to lie before playoff position in regards to the Bills, maybe the Jets getting into a wild card position with a win there. So I expect that to be a tough game, and I mean, the only good thing about those last 2 games is you get them at home, but Cowboys and Jets are going to be tough.
The schedule is interesting for them because you got quite a few emotional games, and they're playing they're basically playing the marquee teams in the league because they play the Patriots, they play the Colts, they play the Cowboys. Then you got the emotional thing with, and they play the Eagles. You got Sean McCoy going back to Philly for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
You got Rex Ryan going back to New York for the first time. Just storylines galore, a lot of emotional games. They've got 1, 2, 3 nationally televised games, even though the London games are barely count as nationally televised. But the cool thing about the London games is just so early. So you, like, wake up and you eat breakfast and you can watch them, but they usually suck.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so you got a lot of – you're playing America – I'm putting in air quotes because I don't necessarily care about the America's team thing. But you got America's team that you're playing, another big game that's coming to your house. So you got a lot of just, like, marquee matchups and storyline stuff. And you play 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 playoff teams from last year. And then you got, and then you play teams over 500, like the Chiefs and the Eagles that didn't make the playoffs, but they were over 500. So you got, and then you play the Giants who weren't awful. I think they ended up being 8-8. So you're playing a lot of teams that were at the mark of the playoffs, in the playoffs, right at the line. So it is a very tough schedule.
Yeah, and I think one of the more interesting storylines as well, you know, you highlighted McCoy's return to Philly, is the great defensive line of Rex Ryan against the great offensive line that is Chip Kelly. And then I can hear Al Michaels saying it now,
will a great defense beat a great offense or something like that? You know, like, we're going to get that storyline. And it'll be interesting because if there's anybody out there that can give a defense fits, it's Chip Kelly. And if there's anybody out there that can give offense fits, it's going to be a Rex Ryan-led offense because he's went up against some of the best quarterbacks in this current era, and he's done well against them from a defensive side. Doesn't necessarily always translate into wins, but he's always got his team prepared from that side. And he's got a lot to work with, man. And I think closing out, I wanted to let fans know that you've got a lot of versatility on that defensive side of the ball, and you've got a lot of weapons on the offensive side of the ball. You should be happy. You should be optimistic this year. I don't want to say this is your year, but if we're going by standard, you know, the typical Bill year, then yeah, this is your year. You should be well above 500. I got them at 10-6 with the, you know, just the realistic view. 10-6 could be as good as 11-5 if your offense clicks. You could be as good as 12-4. I wouldn't have a problem saying 12-4 if I knew who their quarterback was and if I knew if Tom Brady got a 4-game suspension.
Yeah, we got a little information that we need to know before. If Brady gets 4 games, they could take the division. That's not out of the question.
Yep.
So we definitely will see. I mean, I think the Patriots still going to make the playoffs no matter what, but I definitely can see them taking the division because I still see them as better than Miami. It's just because you have all three levels. Well, Miami's offensive line, I mean, not offensive line, well, Miami's defensive line is going to be just destructive. You have all three levels for Miami being superior, and then you have Buffalo being superior to Miami, and then you have Miami's offense is slightly better than Buffalo's. You have a better quarterback, but you don't have the weapons. They don't have a running back. Receivers are questionable, whereas you got talent but no quarterback. So I think the Bills are definitely a step above Miami from a roster perspective.
I've got the Dolphins and Bills games being the most physical and just mean games.
It's going to be some brutal games. They're going to be some very physical, very intense, old school smash mouth football.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the way the Ravens and Steelers used to play each other. Like, you know, they're just out there to hit each other. They don't really care if you got the ball or not. Somebody's getting lit, trying to set the tone constantly. And you got Tannehill, he's athletic and he's coming into his own. And you got a bunch of mean guys up front with Dominic Sue, Mario Williams, and stuff like that. People who want to hit and get physical. And you got two offenses with semi-poor, maybe just downright bad offensive line. So it's definitely a making for a brutal game.
I definitely agree with that.
Yeah. All right, so we actually made it on the hour mark, which is actually really good. You want to close us out with any comments or anything you want to say in closing?
Just randomly to IBS Business. These guys, I mean, my opinion of black people just lowers. In their general, just like touch points that my opinion of black people lowers. But that body, that hammer throat girl that I posted on the page, and all the black guys like, yeah, I could hang with her. Like, it's just too much. It's just too much, man. And these two Black Panthers, and they talking about that. Do you realize why you might? Oh my God, I can't even think about to say, but I'm gonna say it anyway. Do you realize why you might be attracted to a thick woman? Because they brought you here to breed people. That's why. Do you realize? You're falling into the white man's thinking. That's why you like a thick woman, because you know she could bear children. Okay, I'm done.
Oh man, that might be better than Kylie's minute, man.
I'm just telling the truth, man. Right. I kept getting updates about that crap.
Oh man, you gotta learn how to unfollow, man. You really do,
man. I couldn't. It was just like a train wreck. And you got a Black Panther on there talking about. He can throw his hammer. Man, you hate the white man. What are you doing?
Lord.
I want a black man.
Well, I appreciate
you
calling in.
Black kittens. That's what I'm going to call a little black pussycat. Black kittens. tell Black Panther.
You gotta go, I need the ratings, so I support everything.
I hear you.
All right, man. Thanks for calling.
I appreciate it. No problem. It's fun.
All right, guys, so that was the Buffalo Bills podcast. We're going to try to get the New York Jets in tomorrow. I've got an IBS member, Kareem. I want to make sure I say that right. Kareem going to call in and talk about the Jets. She should have an interesting perspective because she's very, 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 very pro-Patriot. So it should be interesting. If anything, I'll just argue for the Jets, and she can argue for the Patriots, and it'll make for a good listen. In the meantime, if you like this podcast or any of our podcasts on the IBN or Iconoclastically Bombastic Sports Network, check us out at the website, iconoclasticallybombasticsports.com. On there, you will find an Amazon link. If you like to purchase things through Amazon, you can click on that link, and portion of your proceeds will go towards our Iconoclastically Bombastic Sports Network. We can better our podcast, do more things within the group as far as meetups, get a better website, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Support us, and we appreciate you, and thank you for listening. This is IBS Eaters.